Are you a man looking for an intensive program to help you overcome your sexually addictive behaviors? Gateway to Freedom is your answer. Gateway to Freedom is a three-day intensive workshop for men seeking to overcome sexually addictive behaviors. Whether married, single, or divorced, Gateway to Freedom will help men regain hope for a new life of purity and real contentment. The workshop is conducted by experts in the field of sexual addiction recovery. Your experts have over 35 years of combined experience. Read testimonials of workshop alumni at gatewaymen.com. Get all the info and register online at gatewaymen.com or call 1-800-49-PURITY.
Hi, my name is Jonathan, and I'm the founder of the Gateway to Freedom Workshop. I want to personally invite you to be part of our next intensive, coming up August 8th through the 10th in Colorado. Call us today at 1-800-49-PURITY or visit gatewaymen.com.
Welcome to Pure Sex Radio, training men, educating women. Are you ready to get real and start living each day in purity? This dynamic program is designed to educate, encourage, and equip listeners with the tools necessary for living a life of sexual purity. Pure Sex Radio brings you the best in mobile talk radio. Listen to real-life struggles, learn how to overcome lust, pornography, and sex addiction, and get serious about purity. Your hosts for Pure Sex Radio are Jonathan Doherty and Stephen Cervantes. Jonathan is the director of Be Broken Ministries and founder of the Gateway to Freedom Workshop for Men. Stephen is the founder of the Hope Counseling Center. Visit us online at puresexradio.com. And now, please welcome Jonathan and Stephen on Pure Sex Radio.
Good day, radio listeners. Welcome to this week's edition of the Pure Sex Radio broadcast. We're glad to have you here with us. My name is Jonathan. I'm here with Stephen. Stephen, how are you today?
I'm blessed. Thank you.
Excellent. Well, before we get started, I want to let you know we do these Gateway to Freedom workshops all throughout the year in various locations in Texas, Pennsylvania, Georgia, Oregon, and even in Colorado now. And these are great opportunities for men who are struggling with any form of sexual brokenness, whether it be pornography, affairs, homosexual struggles, anything like that. And these are great catalysts. So whether you're at day one or year one and you're feeling like you're stuck and you need help moving forward in recovery and growth, these workshops are a great resource for that. We'd love to see you at an upcoming workshop. So if you'd like to learn more about that, just go to gatewaymen.com, and you can learn all about the workshops there. Well, Stephen, we're going to be looking, I guess, this week at just kind of some sort of random recovery thoughts, things that a lot of guys will probably be nodding their head in agreement with and being able to identify with regarding sort of what it's like to be in an addiction and kind of the thinking that goes on there. But then we want to also share some helpful insights that will hopefully give guys some momentum and really give them some traction in their recovery. So it's not just, oh yeah, I can identify with that, I know what that feels like. It'll be more like, oh, and here's some things I can do about it. So hopefully this will be a broadcast that will encourage men who find themselves, well, kind of stuck in their recovery.
So I guess that means take off, right?
Go for it.
So I just wrote down some sayings that I've come across that I thought were really interesting. The statement was made, if you're self-centered in your addiction, you're probably going to be self-centered in your recovery.
Oh, man.
Doesn't that make sense? If you've practiced a lot of self, you know, I'm thinking of our old conversation about self, and you put self and you develop escaping and down one track, pick any topic you want, it becomes almost addictive and that it becomes out of control. I don't care what it is.
Well, let's talk about that a little bit, because some people might be wondering, I'm thinking especially wives may be listening and they're saying, well, what does that look like then? What does self-centeredness in recovery look like? Because she's very familiar with, and I think most guys are very familiar with what self-centeredness looks like in addiction, which is I'm trying to, you know, I got to manipulate, I got to lie, I got to make sure that everything kind of stays, you know, the way I want it so that I can keep doing what I'm doing.
Right.
But then how does...
But these are not healthy statements,
no,
right?
No, they're not healthy statements. Right. But I'm saying...
So he's going to probably lie in his recovery, right? He's going to push the edge in recovery. He's going to, you know...
Still be controlling.
Embrace, yeah, he's not going to embrace with 100% excitement. He's going to hesitate and resist. And
he might be a guy that comes to group, has all the answers.
Could be that guy, right? Or a guy that doesn't talk. He said, I'm here because my wife told me to be here. That's the only reason I'm here. I mean, right? It's just, the point is, whatever's underneath there is going to appear in the addiction, or whatever's underneath there is going to show up in the recovery.
So in a way... This can be an insightful thing for guys out there in recovery to realize that the environment isn't as important as this underlying issue of self-centeredness. Because, okay, your environment before was porn, affairs, prostitution, whatever, and now your environment is support group, counseling. But if the underlying issue of self-centeredness doesn't change, kind of the direction of your life isn't really going to change either.
That's a good point. And I really think whoever made this comment, and I'm not claiming any of these comments today, that was their point, was if you're having a hard time in recovery, don't forget who you are. You're self-centered. And so, of course, you're going to go into a group and say, well, they talk about themselves a lot, or or they hog the whole conversation, or I'm not like them. I mean, you would say all kinds of things that are sort of unhealthy because you come from a self-centered place, a self-centered survival, alone sort of place. So does that make sense?
Yeah.
Good. So the next comment was, I want an easy life and I want an easy wife.
Sounds like a country song.
So, and then you wake up or something, right? Because I don't know anybody's got an easy life. You know, even people that have great wealth, they have another set of fears.
Everybody's got their set of problems and anxieties.
If you've got too many things that you own, and as Dobson said, those things also own you. You know, when you think you're acquiring stuff, then you got to worry about stuff, you know. So, but I want an easy life and an easy wife. Well, I don't know. Life and easy don't seem to go together. Life is a journey.
And what do you think a guy who's saying this about, I want an easy wife, what do you think he's like, what's the thinking behind that?
I think a simple, easily appeased.
Don't challenge me.
Just go along. Let me tell you what I believe, and let that be just fine. You know?
And you know what? As soon as I read these statements, I mean, certainly I chuckled, right? Because it's, you know, there's no such thing as an easy life, and I don't know of any wife that isn't going to challenge and help her husband. The word that popped into my mind was fantasy.
Ah, that's good.
Fantasy. This really is born out of fantasy thinking, right? Because it's delusional.
Yeah.
And I'm not saying that in sort of a cheeky kind of way. I'm saying that is truly, this is a person that to make these statements, he's unwilling to engage reality. Because he's still out in fantasy world. I want an easy life.
Yeah.
Well, as you and I have said, look anywhere you want. There's no such thing as an easy life. Look at Jesus' life. That wasn't an easy life. I want an easy wife. Well, that's also born out of that fantasy. You're basically saying, I don't want somebody that has her own personality, her own thoughts, her own opinions, her own desires. I want it just to conform to where I'm going. And so it's a guy that's not willing like say, here's what's real.
It's not very mature, right, either. You've been around. Anything worth having is worth fighting for, is how the saying
goes.
And
there's going to be obstacles and challenges to your relationships, to your life. I mean, there's always going to be stuff.
You're right. That's fantasy thinking, because anything simple is simple.
Yeah.
You know? Everything
that should be your next quotable quote.
So I thought this was a great line. Life would not be so hard if you did not expect it to be so easy.
That's awesome, yeah.
Isn't that a great line?
So let's say it again. I want to hear it again.
Life would not be so hard if you did not expect it to be so easy. Because some people, I think, have an easy life, and then they're thrown into adulthood, and it's hard. Mm-hmm. And other people, you can tell people that have struggled and sacrificed and give and take, and then when they get in difficult situations, hey, this is life. What are you talking about? I've done this all my life.
But let's think about that. So how are the expectations, or where are the expectations born in a person to come to the conclusion that life should be easy? Because that's really what it's saying here. You know, the expectation is it should be easy.
Mm-hmm.
And it wouldn't be so hard if you didn't expect it to be so easy. So where do you think it's a cultural thing, or do you think it's a family thing?
Yeah, I think if you think about it, if your parents sacrificed a lot and carried you, right, then you have a sense that life sort of works, and you don't realize
things just come to me.
Things come to me, and it shouldn't be that difficult. And so, how hard do I have to apply myself? Versus you're in a home of a single parent, and it's three or four kids, and mom's working, and you're alone, and you're trying to help feed your younger brother and sisters, and there's not enough, and you stretch it, and you got to coach your little baby brother into telling him it's going to be, you know, you're prepared mm-hmm. for hard things. And so you would say, yeah, life's hard. That life's always been hard. I never got a break.
And so what you're saying is, you know, you could put those two scenarios, let's say, you know, kids that are growing up in those situations, you could put them next to each other. And the one that had the really difficult childhood would maybe look at the one who had the relatively easy childhood and wouldn't be able to understand why what they're thinking is difficult is actually difficult, because they grew up with a different expectation of the difficulty of life. Is that what you're saying? So yeah. So you had different
ideas. Well, let's
ideas
make it more complicated. Let's have those two marry. The guy's laying around going, hey, I don't know, it ought to show up. And the girl's working, or the girl, you know,
flipping
around.
I think you just hit a nerve in our listeners, you know.
Flip it around. But the whole point is your expectation may be off.
Yeah.
Right? If you think it's supposed to be easy, then stop, back up, and readjust. Okay, this is life. We're fighting our way through. God is refining us through this fire. And so just live well today, because tomorrow, he says, there's plenty of challenges tomorrow. And just live today and let tomorrow take care of itself.
But, you know, here's a new wrinkle to this, because really we're talking about what? Guys who've developed a sexual addiction, right? And I think for the majority of guys that have gone to that length in the continuum to where they've developed a sexual addiction, they've had a long-term training to think that things should come easily. Because really, isn't that what porn is teaching you? Porn is teaching you, hey, you know, relationships should be easy. You should get what you want, consume. It's all about
porn,
you.
Porn, satisfaction.
Know? Yeah, so...
My way.
So a sexual addiction continuum to go from a place of, you know, introduction to sexual material to now you are fully addicted to it is a long-term training in having an expectation that life should be easy, because everything becomes, again, revolving around me, and it should just come to me and get what
and
I want.
Escaping and not pressing in and going back and forth and holding hands with your spouse. It's running off with a secret on the side.
So I think for those listeners out there who have, you know, you find yourself in that place of sexual addiction and you find yourself in recovery, this statement, I hope, will really challenge you to begin to reassess your expectations on life, because I think that's what part of recovery is. It's facing reality.
Mm-hmm.
It's reevaluating your expectations on, because a lot of guys, you've seen this too, Steve, they come into recovery with this expectation that it should just all fall into place.
Oh, my goodness. I cannot believe how many guys come in and you see them all fired up for the first. And by the third visit, they're starting to fade out. They don't come back.
Yeah.
It's like, you mean I got to work that hard? How long have you been in this group? And what are you asking me to do?
And then you tell them that
I came here because my wife told me. I didn't even come here because I wanted to come here.
And then you have to temper when you're going to tell them that, you know, really the journey you're on to get to a place of real wholeness and health is about 3 to 5 years. And then, you know, they're like that cartoon where there's just that little cloud of dust and they've hit the door, you know.
They went another group. Right. That was a better solution. You got a bad plan, a bad solution. You're talking about the first year is just about sanity and holding, and you really do most of your growth, your second and third and fourth, mm-hmm. right? That's what you're saying.
Yeah.
So this next statement comes from a wife, and you can just hear this. You can just come up with an image in your head of a wife saying, I did not sign up for this.
Mm-hmm.
I did not know that was all in the basement of your life. I did not sign up for what a mess you are. I did not sign up for this.
And you know what's interesting, I think, and I'm not at all trying to belittle this statement, but I think, isn't it interesting that when we are standing at the altar, there are certain things that we never put into that category of for worse. You know, say for better or for worse. And there are certain things that at that moment never enter our expectation of what could be in that.
You're scaring a lot of young unmarried girls right now.
And it's,
that could be one of the things that.
And that's what this woman is saying. See, I didn't sign up for this. That wasn't in my for worse category of what I signed up for. And so it's a devastating reality that this woman now has to face of what am I going to do now? Because this wasn't part of my expectation of that for worse category, but
that's a good
point. I did stand at the altar and commit to this man. So now she's got this incredible tension in her being of what do I do now?
And what a struggle. And there's a real sadness in as I say this statement.
It is,
she's going, I wanted to dream and I wanted to build. No, we have to go unravel all the mess you made before we can really get to the dream and fun and free part, you know? Mm-hmm. So we can empathize with wives. And I think it goes both ways. I think there are men that got into a relationship and could say this too. I did not sign up for that.
Absolutely.
Yeah. I did not know you had this much baggage in your basement that you were smiling and nodding and not wanting to talk about, and now I have to live with.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So I think this next statement is a great insight of a guy that's really been working and waking up in terms of formerly being consumed with sexual fantasy, escaping rituals. Now he's waking up and he says, you know what? I just realized I have not loved very well. I don't know how to love well, and I have not loved very well.
I'll claim that statement. You said you weren't going to claim any of these, but I can totally identify with that one, because I think as I started waking up in recovery, that was one of, you know, you mentioned that this one about this woman saying, I didn't sign up for this. And I don't know why I'm getting emotional, but my waking up in recovery was realizing, man, I don't even, not only do I not know how to love, but I certainly have done a poor job of it. And it was, I would say even more than all the devastating acts that I had done in my sexuality, coming to that realization was probably the most painful realization in my recovery. Because I realized it wasn't just about the betrayal that I'd done to my wife and how I'd, you know, hurt my family name and all that kind of stuff. It was like, I've not even known how to be in relationship with these people.
That I've been in relationship.
Right. I mean, because to me, loving well means you've really connected well, and so
and bonded and held the union and
like,
made a safe place.
Man, that was a real devastation for me to realize I have not loved well. And then kind of the I would even add to that statement. And so how do I love well? You know, it's like you come to that realization, and then you wonder, what does it even mean to love? How do you love? And that's kind of what that journey is about in recovery, is then learning how to love well.
Wow, you just said it, Jonathan. I think you just opened the door. You know, every now and then I think there are keys given on this program. And it's when you touch that place inside yourself and say, I don't know how to do this, but I want to and I can. And if I do, it'll be my life will be richer and fuller, you know? So,
and that's where I think you begin to understand what it is to receive help. you start to gain a new humility, because when you recognize I've not loved well and I don't know how to love,
yeah.
then you start looking around and saying, can you teach me? Can somebody teach me how to love?
Yeah.
And you're not, you know, you're sloughing off that it's all about me and, you know, that kind of thing. And you're starting to learn to love.
So I'd like to highlight a moment in the radio program history. I usually cry first. I think you just teared up in a moment. So I just like to sow note on radio program 357.
Whatever.
I have no idea
yeah.
what this yeah. is. We nice. Are a couple of emotional guys that are trying to feel, you know, and think and love well.
And it's not like we ever plan for it to hit us. No, it just happens,
right.
you know.
So that's right. So the next comment is, you're done, right? I can go on?
Yeah, go on.
Okay.
Man.
So the next comment is, celebrate recovery. But beyond celebrate recovery, celebrate connecting.
Mm-hmm.
Celebrate connecting with people and being present. And it's really what you just talked about, loving well. Because are we going to be in recovery, or just do men have to stay in recovery? Does everybody just recover from something? Or do we get past that? And there's whole two school of thought. Oh, you never get out of recovery. You know, you're always in recovery. Or you move over and then, you know, recovery is like the healing part. But when do you really get engaged and embrace the process and really participate? Mm-hmm. Well, when you celebrate connecting. And Jonathan, you just did. You just said, I'm grieving some old stuff. But you know what? I'm not doing that anymore.
Well, I'll give you an example, because I've been part of a group that I started in my church 14 years ago. And so every week for 14 years, I've been hanging out with sexual addicts in recovery. Mm-hmm. And so what's really been cool is, you know, in the first few years, I really had this mentality of, man, I'm going to this group every week because, okay, yeah, I want to help these guys. But really, I mean, I need this, and I need to be part of this. And I was still thinking very much in that, and I'm going to put this in air quotes, listeners, in that recovery mindset,
yeah.
that I'm in this recovery. Probably for the last 10 years or more, I have absolutely looked forward every week to going to that group on Tuesday nights because of the men that are there. And guess what? It's been different men. I mean, we've had probably over 300 or 400 guys come through that group over the 14-year period. So it's not always been the same, but because I get to connect with these guys. And so the idea, that's why I like this idea of celebrate connecting. It takes a while, I think, to get to that place where you're celebrating just the connection aspect, that you're growing with other men, that you're connecting with other guys, because there is that piece of kind of getting your windshield clean, so to speak, so that you can actually see the other people in the room. And because I do think there's sort of this, if I could put it this way, there's kind of this incubation period that you have to be in for a while when you're in group, where it really is about you're in recovery. You've got to, you know, there's a healing process. You've got to stop the bleeding. You need to
right.
kind of, there's that birthing of this whole new life that you're going to be living. And then things start getting clearer in your life, and you can start looking around and going, oh, you know what? I'm not here as much for me anymore as I am for these guys over here. And man, I love to, I want to hear your story, and I can't wait to see
but
what
I'm
God's
one
doing.
Of you too.
Oh, absolutely.
I'm
yeah.
one of this group. This is my group. I need them. They need me. That's a wonderful place to be.
Yeah.
And that's celebrating connecting and practicing connecting. And you know, I've always thought when you tell your sexual struggles and you get them out, that's a safe place where you can do that. And when you do it, there's a freedom there. And it's almost like, nobody can really hurt you anymore.
Mm-hmm.
When your ugliest stuff that anybody could ever throw in your face, you faced it.
Yeah.
Don't you think that's true?
Absolutely. That
nobody could really hurt you worse than having to confess and being loved still.
Well, I think of in Hebrews where it says, you know, what can man do to me?
Oh, that's good.
It's like, if I've got my confidence in God and I have nothing to hide, what can you do to me? You
that's
know?
Good. That's good. So we're working on celebrating and connecting. So this next comment was, I was introduced to sexuality at age 6 or 7 or 8, and it has affected me the rest of my life. So this is a little boy, right? He's 6 years old. He's playing like a kid with his trucks, and somebody introduced sexuality to him. And then he said, he then practiced that same thing he learned. And he said, then I have used sex as love. And I want people to love me through sex and love on me through sex and make me feel okay through sex. Isn't that interesting how a little boy who was innocent and open and free and safe learns this thing, and then it becomes a dark secret, and then love gets woven into it. I mean, to feel love gets woven in.
And it's almost as if then it's like the trap was set, making love one-dimensional. There's only one avenue through which his little mind began to equate love. And you know what? We see a lot of guys that are fully sexually addicted, and that's kind of where it's like the only avenue through which they can feel, the only avenue through which they define love. I mean, it's just, it becomes the track. And so they don't know that love is such a multifaceted, there's so many dimensions to how you can express and feel love and give love. And so that's why in their relationships, you know, they don't know any other way to.
So this could have been a 40 or 50 year old guy. Say he's 50 years old. And he said, when I was 6 or 7, when I was little, I learned this thing. And then it sort of wrapped itself around me, and I started playing with it. And somebody did these things to me. I did them to others. And they became powerful and strong, and I learned something, and I never realized what it did. Overdeveloping, supersizing this one thing made me, you know, sort of stunted in all these other areas because I've supersized everything into sexuality.
You know, we've got just a few minutes left, and I do want to get to some of these. We may just pick out a few of these sort of insights that are going on here. And one of the ones and these are things that we hope will help you kind of gain some momentum or some traction in your recovery. And one that I really want to highlight is needing to move from emotional boy to manhood. And, you know, this is something that I think we see a lot. I know this was an experience in my own life, but I see it a lot in guys who develop sexual addiction, is kind of at whatever point they faced a significant trauma connected with their sexuality. A lot of times their emotional development was stunted right there. For me, it was 12 years old. And when I started recovery in my mid to late 20s, one of the things I discovered was I'm biologically a 26, 27 year old, but emotionally I'm still stuck at 12. And so part of recovery was learning how to grow up emotionally from being that little boy that was scared, that didn't know how to handle, you know, anything, to now, okay, what does it mean to grow into manhood? And that's a process that counseling was extremely helpful for me in terms of being able to unpack where my emotions sort of got cauterized at 12, and how do you heal from that wound and then begin to move forward?
Well, I think what you're saying is very powerful, because you're saying, you know, at age 12, I found sexuality and it became the tool. But there were other tools that didn't get developed, didn't get used, didn't get included. And so the whole idea of even what you've demonstrated today by feeling, right, was a skill that wasn't practiced.
Right, absolutely.
And so feeling, and then learning to be good at loving, and then grieving, you know, and then sort of pressing into emotions, being quiet with self instead of being scared of self, the things we've talked about, you know.
What would be one that you would share with the guys that might be helpful as we have a minute left here?
I think we got a list of 10 or 12 things. You can't see them, but the whole idea of going it alone is the one that I think we should talk about alone at some point, because the whole idea of alone is the best way somewhere got woven in, and a lot of lonely men being alone, looking, but they're with people, but they're using people, but they're really alone. When they're around other people, they're alone. They still feel alone. And what is, you know, your picture today was wonderful, because I go to my group and I see my guys, and they're my guys, and I belong to them, and they belong to me. I'm not alone. You know, that's such a wonderful thing.
Well, folks, we're out of time, but, you know, if this is resonating with you guys, some of you guys feel stuck and you need to connect and you need some help on your journey, please contact us. I mean, that's what we're here for, is to help you break free and grow. So you can do that by going to our website at puresexradio.com or just calling us at 1-800-49-PURITY. And we look forward to having you back here again next week on the Pure Sex Radio broadcast.
Pure Sex Radio is paid for by Be Broken Ministries. Visit us online at puresexradio.com.